Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Everyone awake and ready? Yes. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Mother.
Dearest Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. To be here this morning and to have you all here. So sitting and meditating, God was showing me what wonderful and infinite souls each one of you are. And that truly, what Jesus said, where two or more are gathered, there I am. That infinite Christ consciousness, and what a synergy happens, that the sum becomes more than the total of the parts, because an uplifting and vibration is created where two or more come together in that holy name, in that vibration of the infinite. This morning we have a beautiful, glorious day going. The sun is shining. All the plants are in bloom. It's a wonderful time of year, so it seemed a little incongruous to me the topic that God gave me for today, did God create evil? But that's so it is. And as he wants it. And as I think about the title, I think, well, I wonder what God has to say about it today, because that's an interesting title. Reading from Master, from his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse 15, the good and evil and their relation to the soul. And the quote from the Gita, the all-pervading takes no account of anyone's virtue or sin. Wisdom is eclipsed by cosmic delusion. Mankind is thereby bewildered. The omnipresent cosmic beam creates for entertainment the dream pictures of men, their virtuous and sinful activities on this dream earthly stage. God is not a meticulous accountant of human merits and demerits. The cosmic beam, its wisdom, and its ever new joy are hidden behind the shadows of relativity and ignorance. Mortals, not perceiving the causative light, stumble in the darkness of delusion. A fog hides the right road to a destination and causes the driver of a car to go astray. So the mists of delusion obscure the wisdom path toward God. And man veers into ditches of mortal desires and ignorance. The spirit, or Sat Chidananda, the ever-existent, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss, is uncontaminated by the darkness of delusion or nature. Even as a serpent, the possessor of poison, itself remains unaffected by its own venom. Though the poison is produced within the snake, the creature is not affected by it. Similarly, even though the delusive dualities of nature derive from God, he is uninfluenced by them. When a serpent bites anyone, the victim is affected by the poison. Similarly, man as a mortal is afflicted by cosmic delusion. Nevertheless, though Maya is imposed on man, he can overcome it by refusing to yield to its temptations. The devotee should understand that the purpose of God in creating the world and delusion is to develop perfect beings. This pastime is God's hobby. It's difficult sometimes to think of this pastime as God's hobby. But as Master would say, he takes his hobby very seriously. Is there a purpose to everything that is created? And you would have to say there is. When we look out at nature and we see the beautiful balance that's created in things, how when plants are born into a seed, and that seed then shoots out its tiny little roots and branches, still it is in ignorance, still it is underground in darkness. But somehow it knows to intuitively, instinctively reach out for the light and dig down deep into the earth to draw its nurturance from the earth, while at the same time reaching up towards the light. Both are needed. Similarly, for the human soul, we are born into the dirt of this earth, into the ignorance and the darkness. We feel many times as if we are a seed just cast away, without real purpose, without real design. But this could not be further from the truth. Even as the seed may be ignorant of its ultimate destination as a large tree, while it is still in the seed form, nevertheless, everything that is required to become a large tree is contained within that tiny little seed. And it's a marvelous thing when you think about it, that the design inherent within that tiny little seed will grow into great roots that will reach down into the ground, that will form a trunk, and then limbs, and then leaves, perhaps fruit. And it stretches up towards the light and digs down deep into the earth. What a marvelous thing. How does it know to do this? And if a seed is sown upside down, it will right itself. And the roots will go downward. They don't go upward. But it turns itself around and it goes downward. This is a tremendous thing when you think about it. And so is the human soul. And whether souls know it or not, there is an ultimate design and purpose for every one of us. And sown within our DNA structure, sown within our consciousness, sown deep within ourselves, is all of the ultimate potentiality that we are designed to be created with. But when we are sown down into that earth, many times we are confused. We have the human mind to sort things out with, and the human mind becomes distorted oftentimes. It does not directly perceive the truth. And as God showed me one time, that we chose as individual souls to come on this sojourn. We had connection with that infinite consciousness, but we wanted the adventure. We wanted the journey. I remember going on whitewater raft trips that were guided, and sometimes the whitewater would get pretty rough. People would get thrown out of the boat. I got thrown out a few times. We were going down what was called Haystack, and when we came back up, the water is so powerful it threw the first two of us right out of the water, right into the water. And I didn't know which way was up, sideways or down. I happened to reach up my hand and I felt there the boat and then the safety line that wraps around the boat, what they call the chicken line. And so I grabbed onto that, and I felt somebody bumping underneath mine, and so I grabbed onto their collar and yanked them up because they were still deep underwater. And gradually we all came up, and we made it all right. But when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you think, I paid money to come on this adventure? This is a little bit too much, and some people don't go back. But it's the kind of thing that you tell tales about later on. And within a year or so, you recover from all the traumas and all the cuts and the bruises, and you think, well, that was fun. Why don't we do it again? Or you think about going into a movie, and you watch that movie, and it's perhaps about some very dramatic, traumatic kind of thing. It's maybe has war, maybe loss, maybe all kinds of difficult things that happen to the characters. And yet we watch it as entertainment. Are we crazy? What is it that we're trying to do when we focus on these kinds of things? It's because we're attracted to this play. We're attracted to the nature of things. And we want that adventure. We want to experience what it is to be a human being. And we can't fully know what it is to be a human being until we have really cut ourselves off from our infinite capacity of knowing God. And now we're thrown out on our own. We're put into this adventure. And we projected ourselves first, perhaps, into very basic forms of life, such as mineral, such as the soil, such as rock. And one of my earliest memories that God has given me in incarnations is being molten rock, as that rock came out of the earth and oozed across, and there's a feeling of motion and movement that came with that, and then a great solidifying as it cooled, and it cooled into a form. And I remained in that consciousness for a very, very long time. And then you think, in your soul, I want more experiences. I want something a little bit more refined this time. And so you move into the vegetable kingdom. There you have a shorter life, perhaps, but you also have the movement. You have the growth. You have the fruition. And eventually you have the death. And so it's more dynamic in that sense. And so consciousness grows. And then you think, as a soul, I want to refine it even more. And so you come into animal form. And in animal form, you have even more movement. You have even more choices. Now you can choose to go left or to right. You can't do that as a mineral or as a vegetable. But as an animal, you can make more choices. And so you have a higher form of intelligence that you can operate through. And so on it goes until you finally come into the human form. Now, the human form has unique virtues to it. It has the capacity in the higher chakras, or the higher regions of the subtle nervous system deep within you, for cosmic or Christ consciousness. And it has the capacity for greater good, because it has the intelligence begin to know more and more what it can do for others. But along with that comes free choice. And with more free choice, you can choose to be more selfish. You can choose to get out of march with nature's walking towards the infinite. And with that free choice, you have tests along the way. It's an interesting thing. When I was listening to a theologian one time, and he pointed out that in the Old Testament, the devil is different than many traditional Christian churches have taken it, that in the Old Testament, the devil was the tester. You look at the life of Job, for instance, and it's an odd story in a way, because Job's this wonderful man, and God and the devil are having a conversation. And the devil says, nobody really cares that much about you. And God says, there's a few who really love me more than everything else. And he says, well, who, for instance? He said, well, Job, look at him over there. The devil says, well, he's got everything. He's got wealth. He's got good health. He's got a wonderful family. What's not to like? Of course he loves you and appreciates you. Well, God says, Job would be true to me no matter what. And the devil said, well, let's prove it. And they set out to torture. The devil comes out and he tortures Job with all kinds of things. He loses his wealth. He loses prestige. He starts losing family members. It's all going down the tubes. And there are times when Job begins to have a little doubt in there. And he gets upset with God. But he never loses his focus upon God, and eventually he comes through it all. And he loves God more than anything else. And he surrenders himself to God without knowing why these things have occurred. And so in the Old Testament, the devil is the tester. He's not the antithesis to God. He's the antithesis, you might say, to the human being or God within the human being. And he is the tester. He's the one that tries to delude us into distracting the mind from the one true goal in life, and lays out the multiplicity of all the things that we encounter in this lifetime. And he is testing us, who is a true lover of God, and who will become distracted and allow their minds to wander hither and thither and get lost in the fog of delusion. And so this is a great lesson for us in that God did create this delusive force. There can be no other. And yet, we would not say that those who commit evil, in the sense of murder, for instance, or lying, or theft, or those kinds of things, are abiding by God consciousness. Because in that sense, in the human sense, we would say that God consciousness is the purity, is the light, are those universal principles that are acknowledged around the world as being good and virtuous things. And when we have those activities in mind, we are attuning and aligning ourselves with God. And when we wander away from them, we would say we would go away from God. Now, this is all within the context of the play, because in truth, it is all God stuff. Everything that is created is God. But from a human standpoint, we would say that there is higher vibration and lower vibration. There is a higher life and there is a lower life. And that if we follow the wrong principles, we will go more and more into delusion of our separation from God. But if we follow the proper principles, we will gradually purify the mind and we will know that it is God that is the one life. And God is that light, God is that purity, God is that everythingness that we consider good and noble and virtuous. And so this is a tremendous thing. Back to Master's commentary. To encourage perfection, the Lord gave men free will and a challenge. He subjected them to the inner wholesome temptations of His goodness and to the outer unwholesome temptations of nature. Human life is a vast and complicated puzzle that each man must solve at last. When man skillfully uses his divine gift of free choice and discrimination to respond to the temptations of virtue and not of evil, he attains the necessary victory. He is out in the game of life. He returns to the blessed home with his heavy winnings. This, then, is the truth about the mystery of human life on earth. This is the reason why man should not yield, as many psychologists wrongly advise, to the natural impulses, but should be guided by the spiritual inclinations that are truly natural to his being, the soul. Now, it takes great courage to follow this. It takes great determination, because the old programming of going for the things of nature, as Master describes it here, and not the things of God, are very strong inside of us. Scott Peck once wrote the book on People of the Lie. And in that, he described evil, and he had some different case studies. He described one client that he had who was coming to therapy, but that she was so guarded and so defended that she didn't make any real growth while she was there. And in the meantime, she kept on leaving a wake of destruction behind her. And there is just chaos because she didn't plan for things, or perhaps deliberately planning in a way that created difficulties for everyone else. And it was never her fault. It was never anything about her. As far as she was concerned, she was completely virtuous. It was everybody else who had a problem. And why didn't they love and adore her in the way that she wanted them to? And it just never came back to herself. And so his point was, unless you have the courage to examine yourself and to strive to lead a higher life, you can end up leading a life of evil. That is, you create destruction, heartache, difficulties for others. And so this idea of courage, spiritual courage, mental courage, the courage to face yourself, the courage to be honest with yourself, these are virtues that we have to cultivate. And the courage to grow. We all get a little complacent. We all get a little bit self-satisfied with where we're at. It's a natural tendency. We just want to rest for a while. We just want the difficult climb to go into recess. But you know, you're constantly creating. And the moment you give in to this, you start to create the delusion. Because there is only one true goal in life, and there is only one thing that will really give us freedom. And it is the great masters and the great saints who had the sense in their heads to be determined to get to the goal without rest. Now, what we can pray for is that absolute determination and clarity within us, so that nothing else gets in the way, so that we can strive for that highest divine consciousness, because this is no small thing. There's a reason why it takes time. Not necessarily because God is distant, because He is not. But it is because we have not yet clarified within ourselves the absolute necessity for having divine consciousness. There's the wonderful story of the master that when the Chela asks him, "How do I attain God?" And so the master took him down to the river. He says, "Let me do something for you." And he takes his head and he pushes it under the water. And at first the Chela thought, well, this is kind of strange. I wonder what the master is up to. Well, pretty soon he couldn't breathe. And he was struggling. He's pushing back up. But the master had him right by the neck and wasn't letting him up. Well, now he is wild. He needed to get air. He was pushing and fighting with everything that he had inside of him. And finally, when he expended all of his strength, the master let him up. And when he calmed down a bit, the master said, "When you want God just as badly as you just wanted a gulp of air, you will have Him." You see, it is that close. It is that close. But there is much that stands in our way. And that is the darkness, that is the evil, if you want to say it in that way, that is within us. Now, Mother didn't talk about evil because she didn't want our focus of attention put on to that dark force. Master, early on, didn't think that there was anything such as a universal or cosmic evil. But through certain experiences that he had, he became convinced that there was, and that it was a powerful force. And so he spoke more openly about it, in a sense. Now, Papa spoke from that highest plane, and he didn't give anything at all to the idea of evil. He matched the saying in the Gita, "The all-pervading takes no account of anyone's virtue or sin." And yet there were times when he responded to people's misbehavior. In fact, if you go to the ashram, the code of behavior is quite strict. And while I was there, there's a young man that was there, and instead of doing what he came to do, which is to find God, he got involved with a woman while he was there, and a whole drama came about as the result of that. And the woman was a bit unstable, and he ended up chasing her down the middle of the street in the town there, and his behavior was just out of bounds. And it was one of the few times that I saw Swami Satchidananda express some real anger. And he was talking to this young man, and he had gone off the path. He was not behaving accordingly, and he is asked to leave as a result. And so it is not that saints don't see misbehavior. They need to see it in the sense that they have to correct the one who comes to them for guidance. Papa always felt that the highest and best thing he could do is to see God in everyone. And when he saw God in them, he could help awaken that God consciousness within that one. So generally, that was his rule. But there were times when he had to take action, and there's a description where he had to kick one man out, and he literally had to kick him. He had to force him out of the ashram. And there are those who saw Papa at that time, and they thought he had gone off and done something that was adharmic. Dharma is doing the righteous, the right thing. Adharma is the opposite. And they actually left at that time because they felt that Papa was not what he should be because he had expressed anger. But you see, you have to do that sometimes. Or else the evil will enter in, and like a cancer, it will begin to take over. This happens within organizations when there is something that is very wrong going on and no one stands up to take account. And it's not stopped, and it begins to spread. We see that in some of our financial institutions, where some of these things took over. And nobody stood up and said, this is not right and cannot continue. Now, it's not that everyone was involved in it, but there was enough that it created a very, very bad situation. And so we have to stand up for what is true. We have to stand up for what is right. We have to stand up for the light within us. Now, it doesn't mean we need to be a crusader on every little item. We listen to God within, but when we feel that this is something that we must stand up for, then we do it. And we do it with everything that's within us. We become a warrior for the light. And through that, we grow, because when we do it, and we do it in the right way, we are like Arjuna out on the battlefield. And when we have God as our guide and our protector and our driver in life, then we will help this world to evolve. And there's no sense of anything of the ego in it. And Master continues, though God is good, he has originated cosmic evil only to test man and thereby afford him the opportunity to return by free will to the kingdom of his Father. Still, the whole plot of God has caused man a lot of trouble. We must accept the fact philosophically and realize that the more the human body is put under discipline, the more man will find joy in the soul. These are the rules of the game, and we can do nothing about it. Nor would we wish to change the rules if and when we understand the wisdom of their divine framer. And so this is just the opposite, isn't it, of what we think. If I just lead my life the way I want to, if it feels good, I'll do it. And I'll go any direction. That's my freedom, is what the ego thinks. But just look at what that does. When you have many sexual partners, and there's pregnancies, and there's venereal disease, and other kinds of diseases transmitted, when there's broken hearts and broken lives, and children without parents, it's a massive destruction. And yet we'll justify it with anything that we can in order to say that it's all right. But it's not all right. The consequences are real. And unless and until we learn to guide ourselves with discipline and begin to attune ourselves to the higher consciousness, we will not have the kind of world that we want. We will have a disorderly world. We will have a world that is in chaos and in delusion. This is not freedom when this occurs. This is a prison. When we learn to settle the mind in meditation and to establish ourselves in the inner stillness, this takes discipline. And in the beginning, it's difficult. It doesn't go smoothly every day. It's a battle. And we think to ourselves sometimes, wouldn't it be easier just to give up on this and just to go out and live an ordinary life? And yet, if we do so, we let go of the inner discipline, and we don't just remain neutral. We start to go downhill as a result. The cloud of delusion gets thicker and thicker around us. That fog enters into the brain and enters into consciousness, enters into our will. And suddenly we find ourselves doing things that we never thought we might do. And we are further and further away from knowing God. This is the terrific price that we pay. And it is one that we must take seriously. It is easy to let things slide. It is easy to let things go. It takes discipline to remain constant. I think constancy is one of the most difficult things, and I'm speaking personally here. Constancy is one of the most difficult things in the world to arrive at. It's easy to get started on something, and you're enthusiastic, and everything is going pretty good. And then you get a little bored with it, then things aren't going quite as easily, quite as smoothly, and it's easy to get distracted. It's easy to get started onto something else, because beginning something is fun. And you don't want to go through the hard work of completion. So if we can start completing things, I was one who used to have 3, 4, 5 books all going at the same time. I'd have bookmarks and all these different books. And I get so far in one, and I'd switch to another, and then I'd switch to another. And so I decided a very simple thing. I was going to complete this book before I started another. And it wasn't easy for some reason. I'd want to get started on something different while I was in the middle of one. And I forced myself to stick with it and get through it all the way. And so you can pick out certain things in your life that you learn about beginnings, middles, and ends. And to learn how to complete things, how to finish things, and then how to feel good about that. Not that you just skip over it and say, oh, well, that's done, and I just move on to the next thing. Take it inside, how good this feels to complete a certain thing. And in this way, you learn to discipline the mind. Now, many of us, when we think of discipline, we think of dull, boring, hard, difficult, not getting the results that we want. And this is furthest from the truth. Papa said that most people conceive of freedom as license of behavior, doing anything that they want. But that real freedom comes from discipline, exactly what Master is saying here. And so we need to learn that discipline is our friend, to pick a few things and to do them well, and to complete them, and not to get dissuaded from them, not to get distracted in the middle of them, and see them all the way through, all the way through. And this is practice for achieving God realization, because that's the ultimate goal, it's the ultimate test, it's the ultimate in every sense of the word, as well as what you get as a result of completing it. So this word discipline becomes your friend. Even as God, surrounded by cosmic delusion, is not affected by it, so man, intrinsically an image of God, has thus within him all the divine powers. He too can remain in close proximity with the delusive senses without being subject to them. That's an important point there. Even as God, surrounded by cosmic delusion, is not affected by it, so man, intrinsically an image of God, has within him all the divine powers. He too can remain in close proximity with the delusive senses without being subject to them. God has deliberately created each man with an eternal stamp of his own perfection. By succumbing to evil for a while or for long periods, man can eclipse the inner perfection of his soul. But he can never destroy it. So you can forget your soul. You can remain in ignorance of your soul. But you cannot change it. You cannot destroy it. You cannot harm it. As soon as he removes the enveloping delusion that persists through his own ignorance, he finds that he has always been perfect, even as God is, and never was otherwise. Isn't that a marvelous thing? Jesus said, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Now, would he prescribe something for us that was impossible? And from a human standpoint, we would say, but can I be perfect as God is perfect? You see the bumper stickers that says, Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven. But they're ignoring Jesus' direction here, to be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. What can this possibly mean? Can we be perfect in everything that we say, everything that we do, in all of our thoughts? And the answer is, from a divine perspective, you can be perfect because you feel the vibration, you feel the consciousness, you feel God operating through and through all of your being. Now, within the mind, you may have a mistaken thought or a mistaken memory. Within your words, you may misspeak yourself. But when you're operating in God consciousness, there is a purpose for why this may happen. And that when you know that it is God who's operating through you, every moment of the day, this isn't just a belief, but it's an experience that you have, then you know that something is being served by what apparently seems to be a human mistake. Now, for many, they see God realization as something that is totally beyond them. You feel so insignificant. You feel so small. And if you see one who is a spiritually perfected being making some mistake, you think to yourself, maybe it's not so far from me. It can also prove to be a test for you. How can that one be perfect in consciousness and make a human mistake in that sense? I've told you the story before about when Mother was giving me a tour of her condominium, and she took me into the one of the back rooms, and she was telling me about how she made a mistake in her checkbook, and that fortunately it was in her balance and it was in her favor, so she came out all right. So she just got through telling me that story. We went back out. There was another devotee who was taking pictures, and she said, make every picture perfect. So this created a question in my mind. She had just got through telling me about how she did something imperfect, and now she was telling this one to make every picture perfect. How could those two things go together? And so I asked her, I thought innocently, but you see, I was interfering. She was working with me in the back room and giving me specific instructions, and the guru will do this. We'll say one thing to one and something else to another, because it's perfectly tailored to that individual. And so I was interfering with her work, with this other individual, and her telling him to make every picture perfect. And as a result, she gave me quite a strong lecture about disrespect. And I didn't understand completely at the time. But I was not respecting, one, her perfect consciousness, and that what she was doing was perfect. I was not respecting her work with another individual. And I was not respecting her work with me in the sense that I wasn't busy trying to take in the lesson that she had given me. I was focused on somebody else's lesson. I was being very disrespectful on a number of levels. But I didn't have the eyes to see or the ears to hear at the time. And so it took me a long time to work through it. I never doubted that what Mother was giving me was absolutely right. And there were so many other levels of learning that were involved in that one interaction. But I can tell you, when something like that happens, you never forget it. It remains emblazoned in your brain, and it becomes a lesson for a lifetime. And so what the Guru does for us is perfect for us, whether it appears to be from a human standpoint or not. Now, this is hard to take, and there have been abuses of this that we have read about in various people. I remember there was a Tibetan lama who drank himself to death, and he justified it. And he did many other things that I would consider adharmic, and he justified it left, right, and center. And he had many followers, and he had a great amount of wealth, and he destroyed himself, all the while proclaiming that he was God incarnate and he was doing all of this as a divine being. No way. No way. The results are not there. And still today, he has many followers, even though he's dead, and as a result of killing himself. And so, it's not that we go out on a fool's errand. It's not that we just believe everything that comes down the road. But with our faith and knowledge that when we meet a truly realized being, that they can help us, that they can guide us, and that if we accept deep within ourselves that whatever they do is for our highest good, we will greatly accelerate our development. Now, this is a difficult teaching for many, but it's still true. It doesn't mean that it's not true. And it's rare, perhaps, to find one who has that perfected consciousness. But if we should have the deep pleasure to meet such a one, such as with my meeting with Mother, it is the greatest blessing that can ever happen. And when we have that faith and we have that inner assurance, it will guide us through the delusion. It will guide us through the fog. Sometimes the guru has to fight fire with fire. They use delusion in order to get us pried loose from delusion. They provoke us. They make us have difficulty sometimes. But it's always with the idea to free us from a delusive aspect of our nature. So does God create evil? Ultimately, you would have to say he does, in the sense that he is the creator of everything. But when we look out through these two eyes and listen through these two ears and perceive through this body, and we see things that are definitely adharmic, things that don't represent the highest truth, the highest goodness, we will not say as human beings, that is good, unless we have been lifted up into that higher divine consciousness that knows no virtue and no sin. It only knows God. Then there is no mind left to say this is good and this is evil. It is all God. It is all God. And when we rise to that height, we are free. We are ever free because we have freed ourselves completely and totally from the limitations of duality. There is no longer subject and object. There is no longer God and soul. There is only one. Only one. And this is the pinnacle of realization. It is the greatest. And each one of us that are here, we're here for that purpose, to guide our lives, to discipline our lives, to begin to lead a life in such a way that we will not perpetuate sin, we will not perpetuate evil, we will not perpetuate delusion, but we will free ourselves from it. And this is the great challenge of the greatest game there ever was. It is God's Leela. It's God's game. It's his hobby. But he does, after all, take his hobby very seriously. You do not need to be overwhelmed with the task at hand, because God is dwelling within you. He is awakening himself within you. That vital intelligence, that vital force, is even now seeking to awaken itself within you. You would not be seeking him if that were not true. Ananda Moyama said the most wonderful thing. You could not be thinking of me if I had not thought of you first. And this is the truth with God, that when the moment that our mind turns towards God, it's because God's been thinking of us, desiring us to awaken, to awaken. And this is your ultimate destiny, is to go beyond good and evil and know that it is God alone, God alone. And to do it with all of your love, all of your heart, all of your mind, all of your soul, until you stand on that pinnacle and know the truth. And that truth shall certainly set you free. And now, if you will pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. To the light within you.